This is Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickert. For a long time, scientists believe that the Earth and our solar system are unique in the galaxy. But as technology's improved over the last few decades, astronomers have discovered thousands of rocky exoplanets and solar systems throughout our galaxy.
Earlier this week, NASA announced that it had discovered a new and exciting planetary system about 40 light years from Earth.
The newly discovered system is made up of seven rocky planets orbiting a red dwarf star called TRAPPIST-1. And some of these planets are in the habitable zone, like Earth, which means they could have traces of liquid water and the right temperature to support life.
Eric Wilcotts joins us now to talk about the discovery and what it could mean for our understanding of the universe. He's an astronomy professor at the UW-Madison. Eric, welcome back to Central Time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, tell us about this announcement. NASA had a lot of build-up to it, and it's a pretty big deal, it sounds like.
It is a big deal, and it's captured the imagination of a lot of people. It is the first discovery of a planetary system outside of our own that has seven what you might consider to be Earth-like planets, and a number of which are in what we call the habitable zone or the Goldilocks zone around the star. So it really is a remarkable discovery.
Well, and it gets weirder because, as I understand it, this is not the kind of star we thought we might find potentially habitable planets around.
It is. It's much smaller than the sun, less massive, fainter. So it's about the star itself is about the size of Jupiter, to give you a sense of scale.
And so these are planets,
but the planets themselves are about the size of the rocky planets in our solar system. And so they're orbiting about a very cool, we call it ultra-cool dwarf, a very cool star in relative close proximity to that star. So it is very different from our own solar system.
Right. As I understand it, you know, Mercury, the closest planet to the sun in our system, these planets are orbiting, in many cases, closer than even Mercury would be.
That's correct. Yes.
So compare and contrast this. It's a red dwarf, right, this sun.
Yes.
How would that stack up against our sun in terms of, you mentioned the size closer to Jupiter.
Yep.
But in terms of, you know, the kind of heat it would put out.
It is about 200 times fainter than our sun. So if you sort of take your average day, you think about the sunlight, and you say, well, if I cut down by 200 times the amount of light that I see, that's the kind of light that you would be seeing on this star. Plus, it is farther to the red than our own sun because it is cooler. And so the light, we have sort of a nice kind of a yellowish color we see in the sun. This would look very red, and so you would just have a dim, redder kind of aura of light on these worlds.
Now, this seems like a big deal for the hunt for these exoplanets, planets outside our own solar system. At one point, we were wondering if we were unique. There weren't a lot of things like this. Then it sounds like the thought was, they're probably out there. We should look for systems like ours because that obviously has these. Now it seems like we could find planets anywhere.
You've summarized it pretty well. You know, when I tell my students when I teach a class is that I ask them how many of them were born before 1995, and it's usually only the returning adult students who were born before 1995. So any student born before 1995 was born in a time when we knew of exactly one planetary system and we lived in it. And since now we know of at least 3,500 or so, and have really good indications of many, many more, and they are coming in a variety of what we call architectures. You know, we have a nice system in our own solar system, four rocky planets, and then sort of close to the star, and then four gas giants farther away. These other planetary systems come in all sorts of combinations. And the new one, TRAPPIST-1, is one of the weirder ones of having seven small rocky things very close to the star.
I've seen people make the analogy that these rocky things, these planets around TRAPPIST-1, are orbiting it kind of like planets, or moons, I should say, would orbit around a planet like Jupiter.
Correct. Yep. And that has to do with gravity. And if you have a bunch of things in orbit around a star, or in the case of the moons of Jupiter, in orbit around Jupiter, over time they get locked into what we call orbital resonances. And so they never quite all line up. Their orbits are all sort of in phase in a way with one another. So it's a very sort of regular pattern, but that's the result of how gravity will work over time. So it's different orbital dynamics than we're used to for the planets in our solar system. So maybe we can learn a bit about this by studying Jupiter's moons and their orbits a little bit more.
And do we know if they're all orbiting TRAPPIST-1 on a plane? Like, I understand Earth and its neighbors are around the sun, or are they kind of all on different planes?
So this
and that?
This is the neat thing about this technique for finding them. They simply must all be in roughly the same plane. Because the technique for finding them is seeing the effect of them passing in front of the star and blocking a little bit of the light from the star. And so the fact that we can have seven of these means that these are these seven planets that are roughly, in fact, in the same plane as they orbit around their star.
All right, maybe a dumb question. Could that mean there are still other planets that are on a different plane, or is that not likely?
It is not likely, but you know, we're getting so surprised when we start finding all these planetary systems that I wouldn't bet against it. The thing about getting things that are really out of the plane is that over time, collisions tend to reduce the population of misbehaving planets. And so if you do have a planet that wants to orbit perpendicular to the plane, sooner or later it's going to collide with something. And those collisions tend to flatten out a distribution. And so over time, we're going to reduce the number of things that are on really weird orbits, and all the planets will become a little bit more well-behaved.
We're talking to UW-Madison astronomy professor Eric Wilcotts about planets, exoplanets, misbehaving planets, and this new announcement from NASA. Seven rocky planets around a red dwarf star about 40 light years away. Eric, can you talk a little bit about the technology and the technique? How are we finding these hundreds and hundreds now of exoplanets?
Oh, yeah, the technique is actually fairly straightforward. And so you know, if your listeners can imagine looking at our own sun and then seeing, say, Venus move in front of the sun, the fact that Venus would be in between us and the sun means that the sun would be a little bit fainter. Venus would be blocking out a little bit of the sunlight as it moves in front of the sun. And when it moves away from that position, the sun would return to its normal level of brightness. So what we're seeing in these other systems is the effect that a planet has on dimming the light of the star as that planet moves in front of the star. And the effect is very small, but we can measure it even with relatively small telescopes. So this TRAPPIST discovery was with a very small telescope by modern standards. But we can see this difference in light. And by looking at it over time, you'll notice this pattern of the dimming repeat itself at regular intervals, and that tells you about the orbit of the planet. And if you see multiple episodes of this dimming on different timescales, then you get to figure out there's many planets orbiting about the star. And then going back in to our friend Johannes Kepler from many hundreds of years ago, once we know the orbital period of a planet, we also know how far away it is from the star. And so by having this data on the orbital periods of these planets, we can derive how far away the planet is from the star, and by knowing how bright the star is, we can now make an estimate of what the temperature must be on the planet itself. And that's when you get into these questions of whether or not it's in the habitable zone.
Right. People call it the Goldilocks zone, not too hot, not too cold. What do we know about these seven planets and where they fall in that?
So three of them are most definitely in the star's habitable zone. And so that is defined as is where liquid water can exist on the surface of the planet. And so in our own solar system, the Earth is very obviously in the habitable zone of our star. Venus is just too close to the sun to be in the habitable zone. Mars, interestingly enough, is actually in the outer extent of the habitable zone of the sun.
And so liquid water, we're thinking of, as we understand life here on Earth, that is a likely precondition if we're going to hope to find life somewhere
else. That is exactly right. Yep. So the first thing is, can liquid water exist? There's lots of other things that we'd love to know. And one of the things that you might think, well, gee, if the Earth is in the habitable zone, that means the moon is also in the habitable zone. But the moon doesn't have any liquid water on it. And so then we get to think about things like, how big is the planet? Does it have an atmosphere? And that's sort of really the next big step in exploring worlds like this, is trying to use some new technology to see if we can detect the presence of an atmosphere around these planets.
That was going to be my next question. Now that we know they're there, how can we figure out what they're made of if, as you say, there's an atmosphere, and if there is an ocean or some other form of liquid water there?
Oh, yeah. So the ocean bit will be, until we measure the atmosphere, the ocean will really just be speculation. And so the next big thing is really to be able to measure or try to detect the atmosphere, and then once you do that, you can begin to probe what the chemical composition of the atmosphere is like. Is there, for example, water in the atmosphere? And if you were able to see water in the atmosphere, then you'd be pretty convinced that there's probably liquid water on the surface. But getting to that point of being able to detect the atmosphere, that's going to take some big telescopes. We've got a new generation space telescope to be launched next year that might be able to do that. So that's going to be the next big leap in our exploration of these exoplanets, like these and some of the other ones around other stars.
And when it comes to the hunt for new exoplanets, it seems like the question used to be, oh, it's a needle in a haystack. Where in all these stars do we point our telescopes to find those potentially rare planets? Now, with this embarrassment of riches, what does that tell us about where to point the telescopes, or future?
So you can look at pretty much any star that is about the mass of our own sun or a little bit less. And I think most astronomers would be willing to bet that there's planets around that star. Now, they may not be aligned perfectly for us to be able to detect them, but chances are there are planets around pretty much every star that's about the mass of the sun or a little bit less.
You mentioned the different architectures of solar systems, stars plus planets. I wonder, are we normal here in our solar system, or are we weirdos? Are we outliers compared to what we found so far?
Oh, that is a fantastic question, and the one I always give that one to my students as well. We are unique in amongst the planetary systems that we have discovered. Now, what does that mean? The challenge is that even with all of our advances, even with all the discoveries that we've made, we would not be able to detect our solar system around another star yet.
Huh.
So that is the thing to keep in mind. What we've discovered is, as you said, an embarrassment of riches. There's planets everywhere. But in terms of that nice combination of the spacing of the planets, of the terrestrial planets that we know about, and the gas giants like Jupiter and Saturn, this is a planetary architecture that's actually really hard to detect around some other star. Part of it is we haven't been looking long enough. The orbit of the outer planets are 5, 10, 15 years. We haven't been doing this long enough to have been able to detect multiple orbits for those outer planets to be able to say, yeah, there's a planet out there that's just like Saturn, because it takes too long to go around the star. The ones that we can detect pretty easily are ones that have lots of fairly short orbits. So things like the TRAPPIST system and a few others, where there's lots of stars, lots of planets close to the star, shorter orbits, we've been able to detect them because we've only been doing this for a few years.
So time may tell whether we're loners.
Time will certainly tell. I'm convinced that there are some colleagues out there that have some data that is probably showing, you know, maybe one of these little blips in the light of a star that they might think might be a Jupiter-like thing, but they're going to wait a few more years to see if it happens again before rushing out and making an announcement. So we should always stay tuned for the next 5 to 10 years. It will be a fascinating period of discovery, not only of more planets around other stars, but as we were talking about, getting into the details of what these planets actually might look like.
A lot to look forward to. Eric, thank you so much.
Great, thank you. It's a great time to be an astronomer, and I'm looking forward to the more discoveries.
That was Eric Wilcotts. He's an astronomy professor at the UW-Madison. He joined us to talk about NASA's discovery unveiled this week. 7 exoplanets about 40 light years away in the same system. They bear some striking similarities to Earth.